Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Yeah, that's
then
not
you got fair. You got Washington, and then you have the Rams and the Ravens. Which
yeah,
is,
if you know, want to extend
if
it,
you put that whole thing together, it's probably, you know, it's there's going to be some losses in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Welcome back in, everybody, to the Thursday's edition of Birds 365. Following the scheduled release, we are joined now by the great Les Bowen. Les, welcome to the show, man.
Hello, Xander. Hello, John. How are you guys?
Good to see you, Les. Sorry you had to go through that win and loss game.
That's all right.
But, your initial thoughts on the Eagles' schedule, and I'd like to look at themes. I don't know how you approach it, but, you know, it's about who's healthy, spot, how you're playing. But we got to do it. It's part of the exercise. We've been in this for a while. What were your sort of first reactions?
Yeah, it certainly looks less daunting than last season. Last season, I kind of got my comeuppance schedule-wise. I used to be a guy, there was a time several years ago when it always seemed like you make all these predictions and then you get into the schedule and there'd be a couple teams that you thought were going to be great that weren't great, that had injuries or something and weren't very good. And there'd be a couple other teams that you didn't expect to be very good that would suddenly be very formidable. And my view was, the schedule's the schedule, just go play the games. And then last year happened, and certainly the schedule had a lot to do, I think, with what happened to the Eagles. They just kept, they hit a point in the season where they needed a break and they didn't have one. And they just went, I think that really contributed to what happened to that team down the stretch. They got to a point where when they did get a break against the Giants on Christmas, they were just barely able to
hang on
to a win. Yeah. So I was wrong about that. This schedule to me, just looking at it without knowing any of the, you know, what's going to happen in 6 months or anything, doesn't look terrible. I would say like 12-5-ish. I don't know. Certainly the first month or so is, if they can't win three of those first four, I'll be a little surprised. Then they hit, in the middle, they hit that tough stretch. They've got Cincinnati, Dallas, the Rams, the Ravens. You know, those are all losable games, I guess. To me, every year, though, the biggest variable with the schedule is the teams that you play twice a year, the teams in the NFC East. And we've kind of gotten accustomed to the Giants and Washington not being great teams, even though, you know, the Eagles find ways especially with Washington, to lose to them here and there. One of these days,
I keep saying
the schedule is going to be really hard, you know.
Yeah. I thought it was happening with the Giants a little bit after the 2022 season, but then they just fell apart.
They weren't that good. They had an easy schedule that year. They kind of fooled themselves about who they were.
And now they don't have Saquon to lean on as well. Right. And then now I've shifted towards Washington. I think Josh Harris is the team to watch there.
Yeah.
Josh Harris might not be great, but he's a heck of a lot better than Daniel Snyder. And all of a sudden, if you get a quarterback, and I think Jaden Daniels has a chance to be really difficult to deal with.
Yeah. Dallas is interesting this year. Very good team last year, better than the Eagles, you know. The way they lost in the playoffs made everybody laugh at them again, but that was a very talented team. And hasn't had a very good offseason.
No, they have not.
So I don't know about Dallas. You know, I don't know what Dallas is going to do this year. I don't know if Dallas is still going to be like a 13-4 type team, or if Dallas is going to be, you know, if it's going to be a disaster there. I don't know
how much the human element of all those contracts too.
Dak Prescott having to prove that he's going to stay there. You know, I don't have a good feel for that.
I don't like the way Jerry does business. When it comes to, like, I think more teams should follow the way the Eagles have done it. You've seen this offseason where they are proactive and strike early, and you know, there's some risk. You evaluate players and they could get injured, but it is proven over a large period of time it's worked out for the Eagles. They get deals on these players by acting first and not paying a premium as a team like Dallas would. But I will say, Will McClay, who's their personnel guy, runs the draft. He's one of the best. They draft well.
They always draft pretty well.
Yeah. Yep.
So it's kind of half and half. It's like, I don't like the way Jerry handles free agency and extensions and things like that, but I think Will's one of the best in the business. Mm-hmm. Cowboys will be good. It's just a matter of how good.
Yeah, it's a 10-win good or 13-win good, I guess. Yeah.
And same with the Eagles. I think they'll be good. It's just a matter of how good.
There's
11, like I said, or 13, 14, like Xander said. There's a chance because you mentioned that gauntlet, Les. It doesn't exist in this schedule. I guess the toughest stretch would be week 8 through week 10, and that's at Cincinnati, Jacksonville here, and at Dallas. But that's not overbearing.
That's not a gauntlet, yeah.
Yeah, that's
then you got Washington, and then you have the Rams and the Ravens.
If you want to extend it.
If you put that whole thing together, it's probably, you know, there's going to be some losses in there.
Yeah, no question. I think December 1st, which is the last game there at Baltimore, I think that's the worst spot in the entire schedule for this reason. If you go back to last year, the Eagles, you know, Les, have had success going out to Los Angeles and beating the Rams. They beat them last year.
Yeah.
And everybody's hyped up, and they had the bad first half, and they really just clamped down on them in the second half. And then they came back from that West Coast trip the next week and lost to the Jets without Aaron Rodgers, and that was their worst game until the collapse. So that West Coast trip is more difficult, even if you got to come back. And then you're at Baltimore the next week, which is one of the best two or three teams in football.
Yeah,
I think that is the worst spot on the entire schedule.
That's a good point. I like that point. That is a very good point. I was going to say also, overall, it's a schedule that maybe for the players and the coaches, they probably like it. If you're a season ticket holder, I'm not sure you like this schedule.
Oh, no. It's bad for the fans.
You're gonna see the Eagles once at the Lincoln Financial Field before mid-October.
Yeah. What is it? So the season starts September 6th in Brazil. And then October
13th. 5 weeks. You got one game.
One game with Atlanta. That's amazing.
It really is. It helps you at the end of the season when you have a bunch of home games stacked together. It helps you from a competitive standpoint. I don't know that from a tailgating fan experience standpoint, having a bunch of home games stacked at the end of the season
in December
rather than in September and October is really going to be optimal. But, you know, it's
well, that's why I Les, that's why I don't like the first month of the season. Like, I think they're going to be 2-2 coming out of that first month.
I don't know.
Yeah. And I at New Orleans and at Tampa Bay is more difficult. People should know. I mean, they got waxed by Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
The Saints
got waxed by Tampa Bay at a point where they had stopped functioning as a team, really.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't think Tampa Bay is very good. And New Orleans, I think, is going straight to
They have a good defense, I'll tell you. I'm not a big fan of Dennis Allen as a head coach, but he puts together good defenses.
Yeah,
we won, though. Green Bay, and you know, and I probably asked you this before. You know Jeffrey Lurie's history better than most. He used to hate these international games, or at least, you know, he didn't want any part of them.
Right.
And he certainly didn't want to give up home games.
Yeah, that was a huge – the original statement was that their agreement with the city prohibited them from taking home games. But then when they went to the 17-game season, I guess that was an out for him.
Yeah,
he's kind of – but Jeffrey – one of the things about Jeffrey is he wants to be part of whatever shiny new thing the league has got going on. And, you know, Roger Goodell has made it clear that this is a big deal, these international games, and there's a lot of money to be made there.
Right.
And Jeffrey wants to be in the vanguard of that, you know.
I get it from a business perspective. I get it completely, 100%. Yeah. I think he's right from a business perspective.
And there'll be a lot of fans that want to go there, you know.
Yeah.
London was amazing in 2018. I mean, it was – you couldn't – I did some sightseeing around the city, and everywhere you went, there were Eagles fans. You know, you couldn't go to Westminster Abbey without hearing EAGLES.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm sure the people of London – I don't know. Have they recovered yet? We don't know.
They might not, you know.
But from my perspective, in purely just football, so take the business side out of it, I think it's a terrific move by the NFL and the Eagles from a business perspective. But from Nick Sirianni and the coaching staff and the players, I don't think it's a good spot at all. They're giving up a home game against a very good ascending team, very young team, very talented team. You saw them at the end of the season last year.
Yep.
Well, by the way, on the back end of this, and this isn't baseball, this isn't basketball, you only play 17 of these things. You might be 11-6, they might be 11-6, and all of a sudden, if you lose, they got an advantage in seeding for you.
That's a very good point, John. That's a really good point. They do have the extra day to recover when they get back, It's taking away a very attractive home game early in the season that would certainly be a focal point for fans if it were here, you know.
Yeah.
Here's what I like about the schedule, John, real quick. So four of their final five games are home games.
Yeah.
And then really they only have four true home games in the first 13 because Brazil is not being played at Lincoln Financial Field. I like it from the perspective of I want to be playing my best football in December, not in September and October like they were last year.
Yeah.
So even if there is some hiccups in the beginning of the year, if they can right the ship and they can do it at home on their own turf. And by the way, their only travel in between there is Washington. So you're going right up the road.
Right.
I like that. I think
after LA, they don't get out of
November 24th.
Yeah.
Unless it's the playoffs,
right.
At Baltimore, at Washington.
Yeah, that's kind of why I said if you're a coach or a player, it looks like a pretty good schedule.
Right.
If you're a fan, it's you're kind of wondering when the football season starts. But
I'm with you there. It's not from a fan perspective. I would say overall it does on paper. If we were doing this and we went back to last year, I would agree with you as well, Les. It's a better schedule on paper than last year's schedule. But again, last year's schedule didn't work out the way we thought it was going to go.
10-1 and then it collapsed. Yeah. It's not the way
they beat the Kansas. They thought they were going to lose.
Well, they beat Kansas City and they beat Buffalo, and they're losing Arizona and the Giants down the stretch. So that tells you how quickly things change. I'll tell you what I was most surprised about, at least to start. The Eagles and the Cowboys aren't playing on Sunday Night Football, which always happens. And both of their games are at least, you know, flex scheduling can come into it, but both of their games are scheduled for 4:25. So they'll be the national windows on November 10th here, December 29th in Arlington. That tells me that those particular networks, CBS first, Fox second, they fought for those games. So maybe they will stay there. We won't see Eagles, Cowboys.
I don't know who's on the primetime that night. Like, sometimes games aren't flexible because there's the game in primetime is so good. I don't know who's on primetime that night. That could change it too.
If I were still working, I would be very happy about that.
I'm extremely happy.
The worst thing for an Eagles writer would be night game in Dallas. You have to be back for the, you used to be, all, it was always a noon press conference on Monday. Now with Nick, sometimes it moves around, but all the other coaches, it was noon Monday. And you just, if you can't be there, too bad. So the only flight out of Dallas that gets you to Philly on Monday morning, in time for a noon press conference, leaves Dallas at 6 a.m. Yeah. So you've got a night game.
Yeah.
You're getting done at like 1 a.m. And you have to be up by, 3:30 or 4 to get on your
plane. Better off just sticking it out.
And then you got to work all day Monday. That was really, that was like being a hockey writer again, that was arduous as I got older.
Les, what do you think of the week 5 bye? That's an early bye, obviously, not great, but what do you think?
I've seen years where you've got some guys dinged up and you think, okay, this is, it's not as bad as we thought it was initially to have a week 5 bye, but it always, now that it's a 17 game schedule, you're going to feel that, as you get to week 15 or so. You can't get everything, but week 5 is very early. It's not as early as it could be. There was one year they had one like week 4 or 3 or something, it was ridiculous. That's part of the whole not playing at the link for it's what the bye week is included in that stretch of games.
Right.
It's too bad, but I guess there's nothing you can really do about it. I would rather have it later.
13 straight games going into the playoffs. I tell you what, the Eagles are going to really want to earn that first round bye, or else you're going right into the playoffs coming off 13 straight. That's going to be a tough swing to, if you have Super Bowl aspirations.
And there's there's only one bye now. So it's, you got to be really good to get that bye. So,
I
got to be the number one team.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a playoff team, but I don't think they're getting the bye. So they're going to keep playing.
Now, I have no idea how good they're. I mean, I think they'll be pretty good.
Yeah, same.
They might be really good. I mean, I don't know. If you can tell me that Kellen Moore will get Jalen Hurts back to the point where he's like really confident and really excited about what he's doing and, really feels like he's in command of the offense, and the offensive line comes through as it normally does, even without Jason Kelce, then they can win the NFC. If you can guarantee me that, I would lay money on them to win the NFC. But
it's a big if,
It's a huge if. Yeah.
And then Vic Fangio. I'm already on record, Les, saying they're going to be much improved on defense just from the presence of Vic. And last year they finished 26th, but I think more. They were like 30th in passing defense, 31st in third down defense. I think that all goes, they're not going to be great, but I think it all goes back to sort of middle of the pack.
Right.
And I think with this offense, that should be able to win you games.
Well, right. It's all about the offense. If the offense works the way it's supposed to, which was a big problem last year, they ought to be ahead. They ought to be forcing teams to throw. You know, they shouldn't have to worry about the run as much. Yeah. And so on and so forth. But we'll just see if that really happens. With Fangio, I loved what he said about expecting more out of players. You know,
Les Beck is great, man.
Because this will really bring into focus, you know, whether Jordan Davis is going to be what they thought he was when they drafted him. You know, he's going to be asked to step up here and not be like, well, it's week 12 and he's a little tired, you know.
Same with Jalen Carter, by the way, as well. They got to build this.
Jalen Carter, I give a little more slack because that he was a rookie last year. Jordan Davis was not a rookie.
Right. He had a year to get to NFL shape.
You know, but with Fletcher Cox gone, it's I really see the bullseye on those guys, and we're going to see if they're as good as they're billed to be.
Yeah, I you know what? I think the best advantage with Vic is the fact that everything Sean Desai did is basically what Vic would do from a philosophy standpoint. But he doesn't have the reputation, so he got questioned at every corner.
Yeah.
And it was like, why are you throwing James Bradbury in the slot in training camp? And, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? Why are you throwing the big nickel out there? Why is Justin Evans starting at the end of all these questions? With Vic, everybody, if you listen to his press conference last, he said, I like to throw a lot at the players early and then scale it back.
Yeah.
That's exactly what Desai was doing, but everybody was, you know, he's Sean Desai. With Vic, they're like, all right, do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big advantage. I really do.
What you just said about Desai reminded me.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Be of Sean McDermott when I was covering the Eagles. When Sean McDermott was defensive coordinator, he was so young, and they had most of the older players had seen him as this position coach who was very inexperienced, had played at William and Mary, you know, and he came in and cracked the whip, and guys like Asante Samuel just wouldn't listen to him, and he ended up getting fired. Well, Sean McDermott turned out to be
pretty at good least
defense, pretty smart guy, you know. But they ran him out of here. Like, well, who is this guy? You know,
reputation means a lot with these players. And Bick's going to have that cachet that maybe Sean didn't have. And I think that's going to make a big difference as well. But Kellen Moore is interesting. And I brought this up a lot because I think there's a notion that motion, didn't mean to a rhyme, but it worked out, is going to be the savior of this offense. I think, you know, if you boil down, because Kellen likes motion, you're going to see more motion. He's always top 10 in motion or has been top 10 in motion. But when he was asked, what's the most important part? He said, clean operation.
Yeah.
He wasn't talking about motion. Right. And you know, I think the ceiling of this offense is obviously very high, as you kind of mentioned, because of the talent. But what do you think the floor of this offense is?
Yeah,
you know, if they struggle and they're not as good, I still think it's going to be a pretty good offense.
Yeah, Yeah. I just don't have a good feel without Kelce. That's the when I'm thinking about how are they going to struggle. Well, I guess one way would be if Hurts just doesn't bounce back, you know.
Yeah. Is, well, yeah.
Another way would be that if they really miss Kelce's leadership and his smarts, you know.
Yeah. I think that's underrated, Les. I think everybody sees him pull in and he snaps the ball great and all that, but there's a lot more he does that's going to be missing.
But I don't
also steal the half yard on the tush push. He also steals because of his reputation. I talked about reputation. They're not going to be able to do that this year. It's a little thing.
Yeah. But
Kelce would move the ball.
Well, I wonder a little bit if bringing Saquon Barkley in didn't have something to do with maybe being less reliant on that in short yardage, that they could mix it up, that maybe teams wouldn't know.
Maybe.
You know, until maybe they would just all run up there around the quarterback at the very last second if they were doing that rather than just come out of the huddle and all mass around the quarterback. If they kind of try to do something else here and there in short yardage just to keep
teams plus guessing. Saquon can squat as much as Jalen, so he would help as the pusher anyway. So I think it helps his both.
I'll be curious to see if they're able to keep the tush push alive. And I know it's like a funny talking point that everybody loves to talk about, but if you think about it, they start every drive first and nine because they have that tush push in their back pocket when Kelce was there. I don't know if they're going to be able to continue it as easy without Kelce. Now, you mentioned Saquon, obviously. Jalen can squat a lot. I think they can, but I'm not sold until I see it.
Yeah, good point. And there's some third and shorts that come up before you get into fourth down territory that were sort of givens with that play. And in a normal offense, they aren't givens. You know, sometimes you don't get third and short.
Well, we saw so many teams try to copy the tush push last year and fail. One of the reasons Troy Benson cited when he said, you know, we're not going to ban this play because obviously you don't ban something because one particular team is good at it. And a lot of teams tried it and failed at it.
Yeah, it had a lot to do with Kelce. It also has a lot to do with Hurts, though. You know?
Carson Wentz was very successful quarterback sneaking, and the common denominator there is Jason Kelce.
Yeah. They were tremendous in traditional quarterback sneaks with Carson Wentz. Tremendous.
Yeah.
Well, at that point in his career, Wentz was, even though he's not built like Jalen Hurts, Wentz was a very powerful athlete. You know, he was strong.
Yeah,
I think that's one of the things that, along with the confidence and everything else, I think that's one of the things that's kind of gone away. I think some of his physical ability has gone away. But, he was good at that, no doubt about it.
At Les Bowen, make sure you follow Les on X and Twitter. Read him at PHLY. Les Bowen's John as well. Get his thoughts on the schedule. You know, since we brought up Carson, if I would have told you in 2017, Les, that Jared Goff is going to get this massive contract and Carson Wentz would be almost out of the league trying to hang on, you would have called me crazy, wouldn't you?
I would. I really would. And this is something when I have downtime that I still go back to.
It's amazing.
One of the strangest things I ever covered in my career.
It's crazy.
Everybody kind of abridges it now down to he was just an idiot and a jerk, and he was never going to be as good as he was in 2017. But if you go back and look at 2018 and 2019.
Yeah, a lot of good football. Yeah.
He got the Eagles into the playoffs. They kept taking weapons away from him. And then suddenly in 2020, it just all just – it was kind of a drip, 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 and then – and I don't understand it. I still think something was handled very badly there at some point. I think the Super Bowl had a lot to do with it in terms of his internal – feelings about the situation and who he was. And, you know, it just got all messed up. There seemed to be resentment on the team because Carson had mixed feelings about them winning the Super Bowl. But really, honestly, wouldn't you?
I mean, human nature. You're like,
this is exactly what Wanda McNabb used to, yeah. You know, Jeff Garcia came in and got the Eagles into the playoffs. Wanda McNabb said the same exact thing, and everybody was like, oh, how can you possibly say that? You want the team to win.
I mean, it's human nature. You don't want to feel
you want somebody coming in and doing your job and doing what you were supposed to be doing.
I completely understand that.
The fact that the locker room got all upset about this is just mind-boggling to me. But I don't – there's a lot of things I don't understand. And that's
I mean – you know, he and Darren, it's now public, got into a little dust up, because Carson was, depressed, I guess.
Yeah.
To me, it's natural. And it's great to, say, all right, you got to snap out of it, but it's easier said than done.
And then he worked really hard to come back from the knee injury and was kind of like, I've got to get back in there. And that was sort of held against him. Like people thought that he tried too hard to come back before he was ready. If you remember the start of that 2018 season, Nick was horrible.
It wasn't
and
great.
People couldn't wait for Carson to come back against the Colts.
It is truly there should be books written on that downfall. Yeah. I think the pandemic hurts. I think left to his own devices. If you remember in that before the 2017 season, he went out to work with Tom House and Adam. Mm-hmm. His mechanics got better. And I think the pandemic happened. He kind of had a slip back with the mechanics. I think the concussion in the playoff game, we don't know how that affected him, but I remember him talking about it and saying it was really scary. Yeah.
Well, I think I'll draw a parallel with Donovan McNabb. I covered a lot of Donovan's career. And when I first started covering him in 2002, Donovan thought he was invulnerable. One of his secret powers was he wasn't concerned back there in the pocket. You could hit him. He would laugh. He just thought, I'm Donovan McNabb. Come at me. And Carson was a little bit like that. When I think about 2017, I don't think about him, throwing in rhythm. I think about a rusher coming in and him stiff-arming the guy and spinning around. And that all just disappeared from his game. And it disappeared from Donovan's game later in his career when Donovan had three or four injuries and realized, ooh, shoot, I'm getting older and I'm not invulnerable. These guys can hurt me, with Carson, it was very pronounced.
And as far as the top, I mean, he stayed on the field with the torn ACL and the torn LCL and finished that drive.
With a touchdown.
To give Jared Goff credit, he went through so many struggles and kept working and working.
Yeah, I am really impressed by what he's done. And that's a difference in their personalities, I guess. I think Carson became very obstinate for some reason. I don't really understand what happened there. He's a smart guy. And if I had been him, I would have gone to Indianapolis with a totally different, I would have been open to anything they wanted to tell me. I would have gotten the vaccine like they wanted me to. I would have, been the leader that they wanted me to be. This is my chance, pretty decent supporting cast at that time. Instead, he ran himself out of there too. And since then, it's been bad situations and, backup roles and stuff like that. And I don't know. I guess he'll never get back to where he could have been.
No, it's a shame. It really is. And I remember, and I wish I could apologize to this one person on Twitter who said Dak Prescott was better than Carson Wentz. And I laughed at him at the time.
In 2017 or 2018, that was not true.
It was not true at the time, I didn't even see a path to where Dak Prescott could pass Carson Wentz. And boy, did he pass him. So right. I was wrong. I was completely wrong on that one.
Yeah. Well, before we let you go, I want to ask one more because it is schedule day. I want to get back to schedule and we can leave Carson Wentz behind us. There's two tough AFC games. I'm going to put you on the spot. I want you to say Baltimore and Cincinnati. Did the Eagles win both, lose both, or split them? What do you got?
I guess split them. I don't know. I mean, Cincinnati is hard to figure. Last year, it started out horrible, then got really good. Joe Burrow is wonderful, but I don't know. You know what? Cincinnati never seems to really quite. I know they were in the Super Bowl and they almost got back the next year, but they never seemed to quite put it all together to get over the top. Baltimore. There was a time last year when I wasn't impressed with Baltimore, but down the stretch I was.
Right.
I don't know. Hey, Lamar Jackson is a great player with some weaknesses, and it'll be real. Those games will be interesting. I'm not prepared to say they're going to lose both. I would say split.
Split. There it is. Les Bowen, thanks for joining the show, man. Make sure you guys follow Les on Twitter, read his work at PHLY and lesbowensjohn.com. Always does a great job. Has done a great job for a long time. Les, we appreciate it.
Good talking to you guys.
Thanks, Les.
There's Les Bowen.
Yeah, sorry I got in that Carson wormhole. But no, Les right. has been around. Les yeah, knows exactly.
He's a guy that knows it. Knows he's it better been than around.
Most. And he knows about Jeffrey Lurie. So I thought it was interesting. Jeffrey's history with those international games, as Les mentioned, changed dramatically over the years. And I think from a football standpoint, again, from a business standpoint, makes perfect sense. Football standpoint, not as great.
Yeah, 100%. Johnny Mac, I want to hit the super chat from our buddy James Carver. Dropped us $20, but it goes into your point about the tough start to the season. And he does make a good point about the bye. Let's bring it up now. James Carver, thank you, man. We appreciate your support of the show, of Birds 365, and of all of Jacob Sports. Given complicity of D, lack of proven and rookie D talent, and new DC, along with the Brazil game, the early bye could, and I believe, will save the season from unraveling if Johnny sees 2-2, then up and down 1, that's 1-3, and it could unravel fast. I do think that's a good point about the bye week, where you have new coordinators, you have the tough Brazil game. If things do get off to a rocky start, maybe it's a chance to take a break, get back to fundamentals, get back to basics, like Vic Fangio said, and find your rhythm coming out of that bye week. What say you, Johnny Mac?
Yeah, I mean, look, you got to try to spin it as positively as possible, and I'm sure the Eagles will do as well. I just think early byes are bad for everybody, all 32 teams. The earlier the bye, the worse off. You're playing football when you get back from October 13th to early January, and presumably into the playoffs, and your only break is that mini bye when you get the Thursday night game, November 14th, then you play November 24th at the Rams. You're playing every week, and this is a team, and maybe they learn from it, and maybe they're evolving from it. They're already working more in the spring. They're going to have a mandatory mini camp. They had conditioning issues down the stretch last season, so maybe they make some adjustments. But that is a long time to play every week, and I just don't think it's good. And I would say the other week bye teams, and there will be three of them. I haven't looked who they are, but it's bad for them too.
You're only playing four games before you get a break. Our buddy Barrett Brooks, NBC Sports Philadelphia, he used to tell us all the time, it's three games to get trends in the NFL. It's three games to, you know, see how things are shifting when you make an adjustment. Or it's, you know, three games. He looks at things in three games. We're only playing four, and then they're taking a break. It is early by
now,
every
match. Last year, they had the week 10 bye, and they came off of it and it beat Kansas City and Buffalo before the collapse started. It's also a very small sample size to do your annual self-scout, where, you know, that's what you do with the bye. And you say, all right, what now? last year, you could bring up Nick Sirianni made a big stinking mistake at the bye, because that's when he started thinking about changing defensive coordinators and ultimately pulled the trigger a couple weeks later, and that turned out to be a disaster. So, you know, it could be paralysis by over analysis as well. But generally, four games is not enough of a sample size to get a valuable self-scout to your team and readjust and do a bunch of different things. Now, Nick, Vic is smart enough to just scale back on his own. He can make adjustments from, you know, in a game week. He's got enough experience, and he will. That's the whole versatility aspect about Vic Fangio's defense. They will look completely different from one week to the next week. One of his most famous, everybody gives Bill Belichick credit for beating the Rams in the Super Bowl, where they held him to three points, I think it was. He was copying what Vic did in the season to stop that Rams explosive offense. It was called a 6-1 tilt defense, Vic called it, where he put six people on the line of scrimmage, and the goal was to stop the Rams outside zone running game, which was spectacular at the time. But more importantly than the actual run, it set up all their play action stuff. And when he took that away, they didn't have to play action, and they were bad. They were just bad. And that's a big blight on Sean McVay's resume, because Bill did the same thing in the Super Bowl, and he never adjusted to it. So he's got the capability of doing it, but the bye week that early, it's never good. You can bend over backwards. It's never good.
Yeah, it isn't. I'm with you. I don't like the bye week at that early. And I think it's a tough stretch to win the NFC and get the bye going into the playoffs. But we'll see how it all plays out. James, thank you, man, for your contribution to the show and for your support. I want to remind everybody, drop a like on the show. Let's get up over 100. We're up to, I think, 80. So not bad to start. Let's get up over 100 for Birds 365. When we come back from this break, we have Chris Franklin coming up soon at 9:20. But we have a lot of new listeners compared to when we did our win-loss in hour one. So I will refresh you on what Johnny Mack did, and I'll ask Johnny Mack about some of the games he has us losing. I want to make him explain why we're losing these games. So we'll do that next on Birds 365. Like the show, everybody. Stay tuned. Hour two of Birds 365 coming up next.
If you missed any of today's show on the Jacob Media channel, listen to the podcast on your way home. Available on YouTube, Apple, and Spotify.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it, Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over a million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.